Compensation. A topic that has remained on the lips of public sector workers, especially since the introduction of the new system in December 2022. In the last episode, we had a chat about the status of implementation of the new compensation system. Today, we're taking a deeper dive in understanding key aspects of the new system, what we're calling Compensation 101. I'm your host, Aniki Clark, and I'm joined by Jacqueline Guthrie, Director of Public Service Accounts, the Ministry of Finance and the Public Service, and Kurt McCleary, Compensation Specialist in the Transformation Implementation Unit. And they will help us to demystify compensation and ensure that by the end of this episode, all your compensation questions are answered. Welcome, Kurt and Jacqueline. Listeners may recall that last year, December 2022 to be exact, we witnessed the implementation of a brand new compensation structure for the public sector with a guaranteed minimum of 20% raise on net pay for every public sector worker. It's a game changer that's reshaping public sector paychecks. This overall marks the start of a more transparent, equitable, and easily understood system in the public sector. It's really like hitting the reset button for public sector salaries. Many people may not know that compensation has its own science with formulas, supporting policies, theories, and methods to help calculate salary. As compensation professionals, I'm sure Kurt and Jacqueline will help our audience to better understand their pay. So if we may start with you, Kurt, it may sound simple, but people really sometimes don't really understand what it is that we mean when we talk about compensation. What is compensation?
Thank you for having me, Aniki. Compensation is all forms of rewards, whether cash or non-cash, or a combination of both, earned by an employee in exchange for their labor. Compensation is normally one of the largest expenses of any organization. Therefore, it must be managed in a systematic way to ensure that it supports the organization's objectives. There are two types of compensation: direct compensation and indirect compensation. Direct compensation refers to payments that an employee receives directly from his or her employer. This can be in the form of wages, salaries, allowances, commission, and bonuses that an employer provides at regular and consistent intervals. This also includes cash incentive and performance increments. Direct compensation can be fixed, as in wages, or vary, such as overtime payments. Indirect compensation refers to a type of rewards to an employee that does not involve directly paying wages. This can be in the form of health insurance, life insurance, all form of leave, whether vacation, study, maternity, subsidized lunches, access to retirement benefit, you know, your pension, and so on, training programs paid for by the employer, and other benefits. Indirect compensation is not fixed and can change depending on the conditions for payment.
That's very interesting, because people don't think of things like subsidized lunches and health insurance as part of their compensation. So that's really helpful, and I really hope that people are clear when you talk about compensation, exactly what are we talking about. But if I'm a government employee, how is my compensation determined?
So your compensation is determined by many factors. Collective bargaining, which is your union or staff association negotiating with the employer for your compensation.
So okay? That's a power of negotiation.
And there are some very powerful unions.
Okay.
Right? Legislation, and we'll talk about legislation. You're talking about Minimum Wage Act, the Tax Act, and so on, that determines minimum wages set at a particular rate, and even the ratification of the ILO conventions. Those falls under legislation that helps determine your pay.
Okay.
The market, and when we talk about the market, we're talking about the labor market, the ability to compete with other companies for the same labor. And if you can't compete, you may take a decision to pay, match what the competitors are paying, or pay higher. So that also helps to determine how you're paid.
Okay.
The government's ability to pay. Mm-hmm.
In the last round of, with the new compensation system, the government committed to a minimum net increase of 20%. And that was guaranteed across the public sector. So I think that that has had an impact on compensation.
Yes, but in order to get to that 20% net, the government would have had to establish that they can afford to pay at a 20% net increase. So their ability to reach there determines that that is the decision that they'll make.
Okay.
As well as job evaluation. And job evaluation is the process used to determine the relative worth of a job.
What do you mean by a relative worth?
So another method that is used to determine your pay is a process called job evaluation. And in this, we use to determine the relative worth of a job.
And when you say relative worth of a job, what are we talking about?
We're talking about looking at different job factors that are primarily determined by the employer and coming up with a value in comparison to other jobs. So I'm comparing you as an interviewer as a job versus the producer.
In an organization.
In an organizational structure, looking at similar factors to determine the value of that job in comparison to another.
Essentially, how much I will be paid.
Eventually.
When you say eventually, is there an intervening factor or circumstances?
So the job evaluation will give you a score. So each job will get a score after we assess the factors. So before we get to that, the factors are determined. Each of them are assigned a particular weight or score. And so once we evaluate a job against those factors, we end up with a total score for each of the job. Those scores will determine which band in the organizational structure that job goes. And once you've determined that, then the pay can be ascribed to each of the grade.
What are those factors?
Those factors are, for example, educational requirements for the job, experience, customer service, working condition, responsibility, and other factors that are common across all jobs.
Okay, so why was it necessary to have this new job evaluation tool as part of the new compensation system?
There is always this cry, very, very loud cry, for equal pay and equity across the service. There are a variety of tools that were being used by the government to evaluate jobs in different professional groups and different sector. But in order to create that equity, we had to design a single job factor evaluation tool that could be used, as I mentioned before, to assess all jobs in all the sectors of the public service.
We always hear people say, but my job is special, it's unique. Was this tool used to test those jobs?
Yes, man. Every job's special and every job unique. and they will remain that way. The tool is designed to assess common factors across all the jobs. And as we mentioned before, these common factors we call job factors, and they are across all jobs, as I mentioned, like education. So the tool was designed over an extended period, tested amongst over 1,000 jobs, just to ensure that it is able to assess jobs in different sector and produce the result that will enable the equity and the uniqueness and the specialness that persons ascribe to their job.
Okay, thank you so much, Kurt. I think that's really helpful in terms of our listeners understanding what we mean when we talk about compensation and, importantly, how your pay is determined. We're not going to turn now to you, Jacqueline, for you to explain what happens next. So my compensation is determined and I have my pay in the bank and I have my pay advice. What is on that pay advice? Walk our listeners through that for me.
Anikit, thanks for having me. All right, first we'll look at gross pay. I know persons may be seen on their pay slip. You might see your basic salary. You might see like acting allowance. You might, the new thing you're seeing would be a temporary allowance. Some persons may be paying their mileage and stuff on their salary. But to arrive basically at your gross pay, we basically would be looking at elements like your basic salary, overtime, allowances that are taxable, that are pensionable or non-pensionable. Pensionable allowances would be like seniority or actually pensionable allowance. Then you have the non-pensionable ones. That would be something like your acting allowance, your special allowance. Those doesn't attract pension. As I said, other items do appear on your pay slip. But in terms of calculating and arriving, like taking out your taxes, we only use specific elements. So for instance, for NIS, we'll basically be using your basic salary along with any of your taxable allowances. So although you might have the mileage and the temp allowance, those are not used to calculate your statutory, because some of those elements are actually paid sometime outside of your salary. So there's no taxes or anything that are attached to those. Those are basically like reimbursable expenses.
Okay.
Right. So we look at NIS. NIS is most time the first statutory that would come out, and it would be basically 3% of your basic salary and other taxable allowances. And this 3% that you pay, whatever the amount is, your employer is required to match it. And this actually goes towards your pension when you retire at 65 for women and like 70 for men. So for now, if you look at your pay slip, we have a ceiling on it. So for any month, you can't pay more than $12,500 as a monthly paid staff. For fortnightly, you paid like roughly $5,769.23 per fortnight.
So that's irrespective of how much
you earn. Basically, the ceiling in terms of a gross thing would be $5 million. So if you're earning $6 million, $10 million, $15 million, the maximum NIS you'll pay is $12,500.
Oh, okay.
So basically, I think this basically was done to ensure that there's some form of equity across anybody who's getting a pension from the government, because this would be a government pension. So regardless if you're in the private sector or the public sector, you only can pay a maximum amount regardless of what you're earning. So it's not like you're saying to me, I'm earning $12 million, so my NIS pension will be way above somebody else. The maximum amount is $12,500. That's what you're going to pay now. And from time to time, this increases. The other thing that you have is your pension. And their pension basically as stipulated in central government is it's now at 5% of your basic salary, and anything that is pensionable, which could be like your NIS or pensionable allowance, right? So you pay 5% of that, and you have other sectors like other statutory bodies, executive agent that can volunteer to pay an additional pension. But basically most of us in central government, we will be paying 5% of this amount of your basic salary plus any pensionable allowance for pension.
Right.
And this goes toward, you know, your pension when you retire. So the next thing that you might see on your pay slip is your taxable gross pay. To arrive at your taxable gross pay, you normally have your gross pay less your NIS and your pension. Mm-hmm. To arise of your taxable gross pay. This taxable gross pay figure will be used to do your calculation of your income tax and your education tax, right? So income tax, as we look at it, everybody, that's a sore point. Persons wondering, why do I need to pay income tax? Why am I paying so much for income tax? But basically, there are some rules that govern income tax. You have a three-tier tax. First, you have your threshold, which the government assigned from time to time. Currently, it is $1.5 million and $96 per annum. So basically, what this means is that once your gross pay per annum is at below $1.5 million, then you will not be paying any income tax. Or if you look at it on a monthly basis, it will be $125,008. You will not pay income tax. But once it goes over that, so if you're paying $1.5 million and $1, you're going to pay income tax on the additional $25 at 25%. So basically, anything over $1.5 million or $125.08, you're going to pay 25% of that for income tax. So for instance, we look at you're earning a gross pay of $150,000. After you take out your NIS, that's what it is. First, you'll take the $125,096 from it, and the difference will be charged at 25%. But there's also persons who are in the higher salary bracket that are earning over $6 million. These persons pay an additional 30% also for income tax. So basically, if you break down the $6 million, it takes you back to $500,000 per month. So you would look at persons have the tax-free amount of $1.5 million and $96 or $125,008 per month.
Mm-hmm.
No tax will be paid on that. Up to $500,000 will be taxed at 25%. Once you earn over $500,000, so if you earn $500,000 and $1, the $1 is going to be taxed at 30%. If you earn $500,000 or $600,000, the additional $100,000 will be taxed at 30%. And then you'll have the 25% one and the 30, and that's what will appear in your pay slip. So basically, the more you earn is the more income tax you pay.
Mm-hmm.
Some persons even come as far as saying, but why pay an income tax on overtime? I pay income tax already. More you earn is the more tax you pay. So that additional income, you'll pay the additional taxes on it accordingly, whether 25 or 30%. We next look at NHT. NHT is 2% of your gross pay. And as we go back up to say a gross pay is basically being top of your basic salary and your allowances, which can be taxable, non-taxable, pensionable, or non-pensionable. But in terms of NHT, we'd be looking at basic salary plus like your taxable allowances. That's basically what you pay. Most of your taxes are charged on your taxable element, not on anything that you earn that's non-taxable. Right, so you will pay 2% and the employer is required to match it with 3%. And that goes over, that pays over on a monthly basis on your behalf to NHT. We next have education tax. Education tax comes from your taxable gross pay. And as I said before, taxable gross pay is your gross pay, less your NIS and your pension. So we'll find 2.25% of that for the employee to pay for their education tax. And the next thing is net pay. Net pay is basically what you actually take home, or it is lodged to your bank account. So to get to your net pay, you know, you see all of these things. You see your basic salary, you see your allowances, you see your statutory deduction. But before we get to net pay, after you've taken out your statutory deduction, you also need to take out your personal deduction. So most persons we know, we all know that in central government especially, your credit unions, your insurance, your mortgages, your loans comes out of your pay before you get your net pay.
Mm-hmm.
And personal require, but both of us get the same pay. Why my pay so little and yours so much?
Mm-hmm.
But it all depends on what your personal deduction is. If we're getting the same pay, all our statutory will be the same. But your take home will differ based on your personal deductions.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So these deductions are added up. So you had your income tax, your NIS, your education tax, your personal deductions, and these are added up and taken from your taxable gross pay to arrive at your net pay. Net pay is what you see in your account, or if you get check, it will be appearing on your check.
People still pay it by check.
I'm not sure, but I know most persons will get their bank lodgement.
Okay.
So basically, that's what it is in a nutshell.
Thank you so much, Jackie. And, you know, one of the concerns we heard very much during the implementation of the new compensation was around taxation. People were saying, why am I paying so much tax? This tax look more than what my actual pay is. What accounted for that?
As we said, basically, before, persons maybe used to get traveling. Traveling was a big non-taxable portion. That is now rolled into salary. So basically, you're earning more, so you're paying more tax. But at the end of the day, everyone can say they're still taking on more in terms of net pay. It's just that persons are just fixed on, say, why do I need to pay so much tax? But as I explained before, we all just get a threshold of $125,096. That's tax-free. Everything else is tax. Up to $500,000 at 25% and then over $500,000 at 30%.
So it wasn't a case that they're overtaxed or there was an error?
No, there was no error. Because they're earning more taxable income, they're actually paying more tax now. But at the same time, person need to look at the bottom line and say, I'm actually taking home more money.
Okay. And that was a guaranteed minimum of 20%.
20%, right.
Okay. Thank you so much, Jackie, for that. Well, we have covered the basics of how public sector pay is determined and what's on that pay slip. If you want to know more about what's happening with the new public sector compensation system, you can check out that episode on our website at publicsectortransformation.gov.jm. Remember, if you are having issues with your compensation, your first point of contact is your HR and payroll departments in your organization. They can help you to sort those issues out. A big thank you to Kurt and Jacqueline for helping our listeners to better understand their compensation.
Thank you for having me, Aniki.
Thank you for having me, Aniki.
It's really been a pleasure, and I'm sure our listeners are better able to understand their payslip and definitely to understand how their pay is determined. And that's a wrap for today's episode of Beyond Reform. We do hope you learned something. Join us next time when we speak with the Executive Director of the Transformation Implementation Unit, Maria Thompson-Walters, on the transformation of the public sector. Until then, I'm Aniki Clark. Take care.